Welcome to a very special collaborative episode of Some Dare Call It Conspiracy and Lads on Tour. I am Brent Lee. With me today is my Some Dare co-host, Neil Sanders.
Hello.
And my Lads on Tour co-hosts, Stars of COVID.
Hello.
And Dr. Ivor, PhD.
Way.
So we're here today to discuss the Pfizer bombshell, which supposedly proves every conspiracy theorist on my timeline has been right all along. But first, we've got a very special guest. So would you mind introducing him?
Yeah, of course. With us today is somebody who we're very privileged to have with us and is the science editor for the Times of London, which is an actual real newspaper. There's none other than Tom Whipple.
Hello, hello. I'm very pleased to be here.
So Tom has a PhD in mathematics, and that's all I know, really.
No, not quite a PhD. I have an undergraduate and various sort of postgraduate things, but no, I never ever got to a PhD, alas. So I wasn't that good at the maths.
So he's honest as well, so that's great. So I guess we should explain what the Pfizer bombshell even is. So it seemed, as far as I can tell, it started on the 11th of October. There was an MEP called Rob Ruse who made a video after some commission or something with a Pfizer executive. So some MEPs have a meeting with you know, various people. And he came out of the meeting and he recorded a video where he claimed that, and I quote, "One of the Pfizer directors just admitted to me at the time of the introduction, the vaccine had never been tested on stopping the transmission of the virus." And this led to musician Zuby, I can't name any of his songs, "Looking for an Apology," and Tonya Buxton.
Oh, God. They're not getting an apology.
I thought that's what we were here for.
No, I'm afraid not.
No? So, oh, okay. I'll rewrite the script then.
So, Tom, what's going on? Because obviously, while the trial never said that these vaccines would reduce transmission, that's certainly the expectation that people had. So was it true? Was it false? What happened?
Yeah, I guess the sort of the strange thing about the video is the implication, the use of the word admits. They've admitted at last. It's this sort of mix of nefariousness and revelatoriness of this statement, which was in fact a quite banal reiteration of the original trial protocol. The Pfizer vaccine, the phase 3 trials, was a look to see whether it stopped symptomatic infection, and it found that there was about a 95% drop in symptomatic infection amongst the vaccinated groups. So in a trial of 40,000 people, you had 8 people who were vaccinated.
So eight people that caught serious COVID, not 8 people that were vaccinated. They were all vaccinated, or the majority were vaccinated.
Of the 40,000 people in the trial, I should have said both numbers, and I'm just trying to remember them. Of the 40,000 people in the trial, you had, I think it was about 130 people who caught COVID. Of those, now what you then look at is, once you've hit this number, you break open the trial and you find out the proportion of those who had been vaccinated and the proportion who hadn't been vaccinated. And obviously what you want is that you get far more of those infections in the not vaccinated group. If half have been vaccinated and half haven't been vaccinated, you want most of them to be in the not. If all of them are people who weren't vaccinated, you've got 100% successful vaccine. If 8 were those who've been vaccinated, then it's 95% successful. Yeah, I can't remember the numbers in the control group, but you know, it's 120 odd of the infections were unvaccinated people versus 8 who were vaccinated. And if you think these are small numbers, they are. You need a really big trial just to get those small numbers. But if you imagined, if I tossed a coin 130 times and it came up heads 122 times, you would say something very strange is going on with that coin. And that's basically the statistics you're looking at. Something strange is going on. If this was to happen by chance, it would be very unlikely. So what it tells you is the vaccine works against symptomatic infection. It was not looking at transmission, which is the idea that, you know, does this stop you spreading it to other people? And this is a really emotive thing, because If I say that a vaccine stops you spreading it to other people or slows down the chance of you spreading it to other people, then it becomes a societal question to an extent of whether you have it. And this is, I think, why everyone's got so much of it. If it's just about whether it stops you getting disease, that's entirely your decision. But, you know, pandemics are something about society. They inevitably are, because we're dealing with an infectious disease that passes it on. And so this is, I think, the revelatory aspect of this is people are saying, hang on, you told us that we could stop other people getting it, but now you're saying the original trial didn't show that. And they're sort of, I mean, they're absolutely right in that sense, except there's no mystery about this. The original trial protocol was there. It was reported. I wrote about it in the Times. I wrote exactly what I told you now. You know, it's like tossing a coin this many times. This is what's happened. And, you know, what happened after that was we then had trials that did look at transmission. And I think one of the things, just to give you an idea, it would have been vanishingly unlikely that it wouldn't have stopped onward spread. One of the things about, having a disease and spreading it on is you have to catch it. If the vaccine is stopping you catching it, which this was, then that's your bare minimum. That's your base floor. Now, what you want it to do is something else. What you would ideally have is in those 8 people who were vaccinated and caught it, ideally you'd have it, they were then less likely to pass it on to people. And actually, we discovered that was also the case. And when all this furore broke, I thought back to that time, and I thought, I'm sure I wrote something where people were criticizing the government because the government in Britain was saying that we didn't know whether it stopped transmission. And indeed, this was the case. In January 2021, Pfizer, AstraZeneca, and the government were all saying, if you're vaccinated, don't act like you can't pass it on to other people. Don't assume it stops transmission. And I had scientists coming to me and saying, look, this is mad. It must be stopping transmission. It's stopping infections. You can come up with this really baroque explanation where you say, well, the Pfizer trial measured symptomatic infection. Maybe all it did was convert all of the symptomatics to asymptomatics, and there's just as many infections, and actually somehow people passed on more. But that's nonsense, and that's not the case. And so the government in Britain waited until about March or April till they got these studies, which were amazing. You know, they were looking at the contacts of people who'd been vaccinated and infected to see if their contacts were less likely to get infected. And this is something that you can't do in a vaccine trial. In fact, it's something that I don't think has been done in any other trial ever. This is not an easy thing to do. It's not like it's a normal thing to look for.
So infection versus transmission then? Because I can remember at the time, you know, whenever these vaccines came out, and some of the very same people on Twitter who are cock-a-hoop about this trial saying that doesn't say anything about transmission. Some of the very same people were so exercised about transmission not being a trial endpoint. But as you say, Tom, it's very unlikely that a vaccine's going to prevent infection, which this certainly does and did even more effectively against the variants at the time. It's very unlikely that a vaccine is going to block infection without doing something against transmission. But these two terms they're related, but they're not the same thing. Can you maybe help us explain the difference?
Some people use a technical distinction, which I don't think is remotely important. So what you can say is there is the bit that stops infection. Then on top of this, there's the bit that if you're infected, you're less likely to transmit it. Now, actually, from the point of view of public messaging and our understanding of this, you want to just crunch those together. This is, if you're saying a vaccine is something you take to protect other people, then part of that protection comes from not getting infected, which means I can't then sneeze on my granny. And then part of it comes from, if I do get infected and sneeze on my granny, I'm less likely to infect her. And that's the societal bit. And, you know, we knew from the infection bit, unless you have this really bizarre situation I described where somehow it just magically converts everything to asymptomatic, we knew from the infection bit that it was going to have a big hit on transmission in that sense. And then we learned from other studies that it had this additional effect. And obviously, both of these things have lessened with Omicron. I mean, we know that you can see that it's taken a big hit. But I actually think people have slightly overstated that to the point where people say it's got no effect. If you look at the real-world vaccine data, you can see that for 3 months or so, there's, you know, starting about 60%, then 50%, then 40%, then 30% efficacy at stopping infection with Omicron. At a societal level, if you're, say, you know, if you're vaccinating people in December before a winter wave, that's not insignificant. You know, that's quite a chunk that you can knock off transmission. So it's certainly less for Omicron. And, you know, this certainly changes the calculus if you're talking about how do you trade off civil liberties versus public health. But there's always been a transmission effect. There was always going to be a transmission effect. And, you know, the weird thing about this furore is not just that it doesn't change the fact there's a transmission effect, but also we've always known what the Pfizer trial protocols were, and some poor executive who literally just answered a question truthfully and quite boringly has now become the nexus of this just like weird storm.
Yeah, the whole thing feels like, I don't know how everybody else feels, but it feels like it's a very bad faith argument to even make. I don't see how somebody who has been paying attention and analysing this intelligently enough to confidently gather any sort of public profile about it, you know, looks at this and says, oh, they've pulled the wool over our eyes. I just don't see how it's possible to think that in this case. And I'm not saying that Pfizer are angels. You know, I mean, I'm just saying in this case, this is nonsense. I don't know, Laz. How does everyone feel about this? Does it feel like it is bad faith?
Totally.
I would say it is, yeah, because it's also kind of a retread, and we had the sort of same thing where they proved it stops symptomatic infection, they didn't prove it stopped hospitalization and death. That's like another one, which is sort of like the opposite end of that exact argument, yeah.
The way I understood it is it's a bit like saying, your car can't be safe because they've never put a human being in it, crashed it, and then dragged him out of the wreckage to see if he survived. And it's like, well, they don't need to do that. They can test the crumple zone. They can test the roll cage. They can test seat belts. There's all different mechanisms that we can use to figure out whether your car is safe without actually putting somebody in a dangerous position. And the question would be raised as well, like, how could you ethically do a transmission double blind scenario, because wouldn't that risk essentially giving people a disease and seeing if they died? Like it seems like that would be tricky to do.
Well, we haven't done it before. So far as I know, I've been trying to find out. I mean, you can do it with challenge studies, like you say, but you know, just this week, there was amazing results on an RSV vaccine, which was for elderly people against RSV. And that was, you know, just like the Pfizer trial.
Yeah.
It was looking for infection as an endpoint. But the logistics of working out who everyone who's been infected meets during the course of their day and getting enough of them to get this, we've only been able to do that when we spent $37 billion in the UK on track and trace so that we could get a decent spread of contacts for infected people at a population scale. It's just, I mean, the logistics would be absurd.
I'm guessing for hospitalization as an endpoint, what you would do if, let's say, 1 in 10 people who pick up COVID end up in hospital, and I apologize, I can't remember the number, but if it's 1 in 10, then that would mean that you're 40,000 people and waiting for 130 people to get COVID. You'd have to have 400,000 to get the results in, you know, in the same time period.
Yeah.
And it's just a massive trial. And I guess once you see that it stops infections, what's the point?
Yeah, I mean, totally.
I mean, you have to make inferences, yeah. And it's, I mean, I guess one of this is a total aside, but one of the what ifs I go through of the pandemic is, you know, now I don't know if probably against Omicron in the similar Pfizer trial, you would see it just like creaking above the 50% efficacy in that trial, but you could imagine it being just under and everyone saying it's a failure. When it turns out that really that trial was a proxy for hospitalization and death, and the infection bit was in a sense, from a societal point, a secondary endpoint. And, you know, we could have feasibly rejected a vaccine. We didn't know how good these are going to be. We could have rejected a vaccine that could have given us comparable protection where we need it, because those were the trial endpoints. But as you say, I don't see how you could have another trial endpoint that could have possibly got us a result in time.
Yeah, that's frightening, actually. I never thought of that. I mean, I can remember hearing, you know, the results for, I can't remember which order it was, the Pfizer one, then the Moderna, then the AstraZeneca one was a bit less, but then they made some tweaks around the dosage and so on, and the AstraZeneca one was pretty good as well. And it was like, bang, 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 brilliant numbers, fantastic numbers. Obviously numbers that have, that are not as good now as the virus has sort of, as the target has shifted. It is scary. If it was 50% or 40% against infection and we had rejected it and it still had a big impact in hospitalization, that would have sucked.
Yeah, definitely would have.
Because you're right, nobody can. So I got COVID a couple of weeks ago, right? I had a bit of a stuffed up nose and that was the height of it, right? It sucked. I had to sit in the house for a bit because I didn't want to spread it. But that was it. Society didn't care. Whereas hospitalization, it does matter.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah, because while I'm in getting prone to whatever, somebody's not getting their cancer treatment.
Yeah.
Like, apart from nothing else. I mean, it matters to the people who aren't infected. So they used the track and trace studies in the UK to measure the reduction in onward transmission.
Yeah, they used the so there were two things. There was a study called the Siren Study in Scotland, which looked just at healthcare workers and did regular PCR tests of healthcare workers. And from that, they were able to, for instance, show that it wasn't that the vaccine was turning symptomatics into asymptomatics. It was, you know, definitively cutting all infections, but they were also able to show by looking at the households of the healthcare workers who did get infected pre and post vaccination, that you were less likely, I think it's about 60% less likely to pass it on in that if you had been infected. And then separately, there was a UK-wide study where they used linked healthcare data to, again, so you got to, with these figures, you got to start from the premise that this is the lowest base is the efficacy against infection. So we've already cut transmission by the amount that it stops infection, which is, you know, it's a moving target that changes over time and changes the variant, but it's significant. And I think at the time they're doing this, you know, you could easily say that the low base there is 65, 70%, whatever. On top of that, they found a 40 to 50% lowered chance of passing it on to contacts, because then they were looking at all of the contact tracing data from the UK's test and trace program. So if you had been infected and you were vaccinated, and there they were looking at thousands of people, you were far less likely to then go on and infect people. So you've got that double effect. You've got the blocking of infection and you've got the blocking of transmission. And all of this is, you know, if you had spoken to, as I did, immunologists the day after the Pfizer results, it's pretty much what they'd have predicted. I mean, you know, they all know that odd things can happen, but basically if you've got a vaccine that does this, that's what you'd expect.
And it's a compound thing as well, right? So if you've got a generation of transmission, it's 95% efficacy, and that means that a 20th of the people got it who would have. After two generations, that's a 20th squared, which equals not very much. I was seeing GCSE math, so I'm definitely going to.
A 20th squared is definitely not very much, but I'm trying to work out how that's what, because then you've got the people you're trying to infect are also.
Yeah, because it's fewer. So you've got one generation less, so you've got a 20th, you know, 95%.
Yeah.
That group of people who are infected, even if they're as infectious as they would have been had they not been vaccinated, because of the 20th of them, and then the susceptible people who they come in contact with, only a 20th of them get infected. Yeah. Is that ballpark?
I think that's ballpark. I think there's been a sad collision of maths with reality with some of the immunology, though, where we haven't hit that would have been lovely, but the herd immunity thing has not come to pass in the neat mathematical way that I busily explained to readers early in the pandemic, when I was like, oh, isn't this maths easy, and isn't it sort of beautiful, and then the immunologists come along and say, well, eventually you reach an equilibrium where people wane and they drop out and babies get born and all of these tedious things where human beings refuse to become variables in the equation. But yes, I think I see where your maths is going, they're a continual disappointment to mathematicians, human beings. I speak as one myself, a mathematician, not a human being.
So what's your opinion, Tom, of people that are basically misinterpreting this either willfully or by mistake and amplifying the signal?
It's the what I don't get is I can understand there are people for whom vaccine passports are incredibly emotive. I don't particularly get it in the UK, because it was only a very brief period when we really had restrictions in the UK like that. There were a few people who lost their jobs in care homes because they didn't get vaccinated. And I understand why it's extremely emotive, and there's all sorts of ethical and, you know, civil rights trade-offs there. But if you're going to have the civil rights argument, and as I say, I'm not sure what the point is, because it's in the past, but if you're going to have it, you should start on the basis of actual facts. And it's perfectly possible to make the argument that this is an unacceptable civil liberties infringement whilst accepting the facts. And throughout this pandemic, there's been a problem that we haven't been able to have a debate about policy, because we've been having a debate about reality instead.
Yes.
Yeah, 100%.
The reality is that Pfizer didn't lie. None of this information is true. And they did have an initially big effect on transmission and, you know, diminishing now, but it's still there. And I guess the thing that I find depressing is there are people who are now building careers on the whole smorgasbord of, you know, anti-vax stuff and, I don't know, COVID skepticism, if you want to say. And if this is something that you're doing as your career, then, you know, you should know the very basics. And the lack of sophistication in this particular piece of misinformation is really, like, even at this stage, it's like, oh, come on, guys, you know, can you not pull out a random statistic from figure 27B of the March UK HSA vax surveillance report, rather than doing something that's just so easily and tritely debunked? Although, on the other hand, given the amount of retweets they're getting, maybe the lesson is it just doesn't matter.
They did the same thing. They did the same thing with the Imperial College, was it February 2020 report that described effectively how to use restrictions to lower the spread. They just found the biggest number in the report and said, Neil Ferguson said this many people would die, end of. And that was total crap.
Look, I was in the press conference and I remember being in that press conference, and they never used the 500,000, which is what you're talking about. If you read the report, it's the 500,000 is the upper output of a mathematical model. But in the report, it says this will not be hit because obviously people will moderate their behavior. I remember in the conference, someone said, look, do we use the, you've been talking about 260,000 or whatever. Do we use that or do we use 500,000? And they said 260,000, you know, over the course of a 2-year period, we've hit what? 200,000. But I was quite surprised to see the 500,000 figure then appearing. I don't think, as an aside, if we hadn't had vaccines, I don't see how we would have avoided eventually 500,000 deaths, because the maths, that's simply the maths.
Yeah, I regard that figure as totally defensible, because, you know, the idea that the vaccines and restrictions reduced the deaths by like 60% is completely believable. It's been about 2 years.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was a fine... I actually read the thing. I think it was a fine report, and I think that it was completely disingenuous how people deliberately misinterpreted it. So I have one question, Ray, for you, Tom, and me, for us all. How does somebody in your position and somebody in our positions, how do we communicates effectively and whenever things aren't quite as black and white as we'd like them to be. So it would have been lovely if we had a measured transmission. How do we communicate the nuance of this stuff?
I think you have to accept that there are some people who are uncommunicable with, but there are plenty of people listening to them and listening to other people who genuinely do want to find out the truth. I am never going to change the mind of Russell Brand, but I don't believe that the people who are all listening to Russell Brand are, you know, there's plenty of people who just want to find out what's going on. And I think if you explain, and you explain with the complexity, and I think, you know, when people say that there's been some overly simplistic public health messaging, that's probably true. And you understand why. You know, an advertisement can only do certain things. It can only be on a billboard. And actually, you look at what the UK government said, and they were very hesitant, as I say, about things like transmission. But I think you accept the uncertainty and you try to convey it. And I don't know whether I'm sure I haven't always done that correctly. There's lots that I've got wrong covering this in the pandemic. It's been amid a lot of uncertainty and a lot of changing knowledge, but I think you just have to try, and you have to accept that humans like complexity. Look, one of the things we discovered on the Times was we have quite good stats on what readers want to read, and in an old style newspaper before you had this, you'd think, you know, what you want is a really hard hitting splash. This is the me doing someone over, or me explaining this terrible, terrible stat, me saying you're all going to die, or so-and-so's scandal. And what we find is that what we want, because we're a subscriber paper, is people who value the articles and who will read to the end and spend time with them. And what we found, particularly with coronavirus, is people really wanted nuance. Mm. They really wanted stuff explained to them. And I think there's a real urge, you know, there's a real urge for that. And I think you just have to keep going. And look, it's easy to get het up by the people on Twitter who are, and Lord knows I do, who are saying all of this. But actually, look at how many people in Britain have been vaccinated and how many people continue to be vaccinated and around the world. I don't know, you know, certainly in the Western world, you know, I'm caveating it because of what the weird things you're seeing amongst elderly people in China, which I don't understand. But in the Western world, we've got massive vaccination take up. So I think you've got to sort of realize that, yes, you have to counter this stuff, but there are a lot of sensible people out there.
1,000 people get it every day now. You know, that's still incredible. We're getting all these victories every day. Their position doesn't seem to be sustainable in the longest term. Eventually it will get down to like maybe 3%, because I think about 3% of adults think like regular vaccines cause autism, so we'll never likely get those, but I think we'll get to like 97% overall over a protective period, but I think we'll get there.
Amazing. Well, thanks for joining us, Tom.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Cheers, guys. It's been a pleasure.
Cool.
What a good guy.
That was really good. Yeah.
Wonderful.
He was so generous of his time as well to come on and chat to us at like a reasonably short notice.
Yeah, this is Friday night, 9 p.m.
Yeah.
Let's not
say it's Friday night, 9 p.m. We sound like losers. Friday night, 7 p.m.
Yeah. Because the thing is, like, how crucified are we going to get now that we're like talking to the mainstream media?
Well, mega
the Murdoch media.
I've not even said my bit yet, and it fucking crucifies everybody. So, like, hold tight.
I think you can tell, you know, somebody like Tom, and we would have had the same thing if we had had the fellow at the FT who does the graphs.
John Burdock?
That's right, John Burns Murdoch. If we'd had somebody like him or a number of these guys who, you know, are serious, serious journalists or serious people who actually understand this stuff, like at a mathematical level, I mean, they're just looking at it like, what the f*** are these guys, like, what? You know, he's confused by how dumb it is.
Yeah, well, this is it. Can you believe, yet again, the do-your-own-research crowd hasn't actually done their own research.
Yeah, totally.
Like, the free-thinking crowd hasn't even bothered to check who said this, why they might be saying this, or to check actually what they've said. What they've done is they've repeated it verbatim because it fits in perfectly with their orthodoxy. And if they admitted that they were whining, whinging, and wrong for the last 2 years, I fear that their egos are too fragile to cope with this. And what pisses me off about it is that basically we've had Tonya Buxton, Emma Kenny, God's grandson, James Melville, GB News, Russell Brand used to be banging that Katy Perry in Hollywood. Now he's lying to the gullible on the internet to give himself some semblance of self-worth. How the light have fallen.
I was going to say, to be fair,
why
being divorced from Katy Perry would do things to a man.
It certainly would, yes. But, like, again, you know, that's his fault, isn't it? Zuby, fucking Zuby, the talent of shit, who's identified a group of idiots that will basically lionize him. And then people like Alison Pearson, who should know better, basically. So, you know what really got on my nerves about this, right? All of those people who've been saying that the phase three trials didn't look at transmission, they're the same people who the last 2 years have been saying there were no trials. This is experimental. So were they lying then or are they lying now?
I got somebody who is I would say a bit part in Crank World, so I'm not going them because they're not Zuby. They're not even Zuby. But you know, was saying, oh, they didn't measure transmission. Oh, what a scandal, it's all a lie. Found a tweet 2 years previously where they're giving off because they knew at the time that the trial didn't measure transmission and they were giving off because it didn't. So they've went through either they've lost their memory, or they wake up every morning and they decide what horse shit is going to get me the most retweets.
Yeah, that's exactly
And maybe it's as simple as that. I don't even see how they're monetizing it. It's total... Sorry.
Well, I think if you get enough people, basically, they'll just send you money over Patreon. But it's even worse than that, Stars, mate. It's not just that. They're basically, these are the people who are basically saying, now they're worried about transmission or the lack of testing for transmission. I don't see why. A, as you pointed out, they were saying 2 years ago, oh, the government leaflet says it doesn't stop transmission. Even Fauci says it doesn't stop transmission. But I don't really see why they care, because these are the people who've been saying that asymptomatic spread isn't a thing.
Yes.
So why would they care about transmission? Yeah. Further, I'll go even further. Yeah. These are the people, some of them have said that COVID doesn't exist. So if it doesn't exist, why are you bothered about transmission? But of the ones who do think that it exists, they think it's mild like the flu. So again, why would you care about transmission?
They just care about being right.
They don't even care about being right. They care about basically like riling up a disenfranchised group of people that they've recognized. This is a demographic that is angry, and I can tell them things that they'll go, fucking right, that's made me angry. God, you're on the same page as me. You're probably quite bright, aren't you? And it's, again, it's not thinking for yourself. It's an orthodoxy. What you've done is you've said basically, if they say it's A, then it must be B. And that's as stupid as believing everything that, with respect to our guest, that the mainstream media actually says. Like, so all of those people, basically, that are repeating this stuff from Rob Roos. By the way, who is this Rob Roos? Yeah, he's a right-wing MEP that's connected to the oil industry. Do you know where all the anti-COVID and COVID skepticism has come from? The downplaying of COVID severity, the grief about the vaccines, it's come from the oil industry, the Tory government, and their donors who are connected to the oil industry, and certain newspapers as well that have pushed shit, like Toby Young and The Spectator and Julia Hartley Brewer. Why? Because when lockdowns happen, when people aren't going into work and stuff like that, no one's on the road, no one's using fuel, no one's renting from landlords. What happened for the first time ever in the history of the world in April 2020 was that oil went into negative equity, which meant that you had to pay people to take it off your hands. So since then, the oil industry has a vested interest in downplaying COVID so that you're on the roads going to work. I know that sounds monstrously simplistic, but actually, if you look at it, that's exactly what it is. So again, all those people, Tonya Buxton, Emma Kenny, God's grandson, James Melville, GB News, Russell Brand, Zuby, Alison Pearson, they're either incredibly easily led, they're either stupid, or they're lying to your face for money and for attention and fame. And I don't really know which one of those three despicable shits they would prefer to be, but it's got to be one of those. It literally has to be one of those. And it just, honestly, it's ridiculous.
Neil's angrier than I am. This is extraordinary. I used to think I was the angry man on the podcasts, but...
I'll tell you, with Alison Pearson, look into her history, she pushed vaccines cause autism back in the day.
I don't doubt she did.
Actually, the vaccines cause autism thing was a good example of where people shouldn't have listened to the mainstream media, because that was pushed hard by a lot of people who should have known better, who are very, very easily taken in. It's one of the things that we, you know, whenever we interviewed Brian Deer, it was extraordinary. It was actually he had to struggle through the establishment, especially through the science establishment, to make his points clear, to get things over. And then they'd close ranks around Wankfield a little bit.
Yeah.
Let's be honest, I think we're hitting the explicit on this one, so I can definitely call him Wankfield.
Yeah, you can.
The tone has changed since Tom had to go and do childcare.
Wakefield is such a... Honestly, like, I'd advise anyone to read Brian Deer's book. You know what gets me about Wakefield, okay? 9 out of 10 people who go, oh, Wakefield, he's amazing, don't know what his theory was. Like, they don't understand what the mechanism is by which he thinks that vaccines cause autism. They'll go, oh, it's the aluminium in it, isn't it? No, that's not his theory at all. His theory is that the measles virus stays in your stomach, it causes your stomach to leak, and then what happens is this mixes with bread in your stomach, turns into morphine, and then this morphine causes which causes autism, which begs the question, how much bread do I have to eat to gouch? Like, that's what I want to know. How much bread do I need to eat to get high off my tits? Because obviously that's a thing. Like, you need to, like, if you overdose, you'll go autistic. But that's the threshold. But I want to know the figures. I want to know the numbers. Like,
I'll be honest, if there was a number of how much bread you have to eat before you get smashed, I would have reached it this week. I had half a loaf in a day.
All right, wow.
Well, be careful.
We got a balance over here.
I know. I was super, as juber as a sudge.
You got to lay off them bread sandwiches, man.
Bread sandwiches. Yeah, no, I don't know. It's such a... The problem is it's so straightforward. This one's so straightforwardly stupid.
Yep, really.
And... You've got people like Zuby who are running around like they're doing victory laps, like they're being vindicated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't understand it. I really just don't understand it.
Yeah, well, I suspect what it is winter's coming, isn't it, basically? Ooh, Game of Thrones. Anyway, like, the likelihood is that COVID's going to go, like, people are going to start seeing it again, or at least, you know, experiencing it. I mean, my friends have been ill with COVID over the past few weeks. Like, it's going up as the kids are back in school and stuff like that. Lots of people are going to catch it. And the problem is, reality, it really sort of jars these people who've spent the last 2 years pretending that this isn't a thing. Because you've backed yourself into a corner where basically you say, like, this is what I believe, this is the facts. And anything that sort of counters that, it points out that, A, you're wrong, and B, you've acted like a massive baby, like during a world crisis. We get it. Like, it was stressful, but most of us just, like, you know, got on with it. Basically, what a lot of people did was scream and shout and stamp their feet, very much like children in the back of a car, like on a long journey. And do you think them going, oh, I don't want a vaccine, oh, I don't want to be locked down, oh, I don't want to do this? No one wanted any of that. Do you think your whining made it any easier for anybody?
Sorry, I find it, as I was going to say, I find it amazing, particularly how people moan about, oh, how many shots is it going to be? As if, you go to the GP or you go to Boots or whatever, you sit there for 5 minutes, somebody asks you if you're allergic to eggs, I ask the flu vaccine, but anyway, somebody, you know, they ask a couple of questions, you get in the arm for like a second, and you sit and look at razors for 15 minutes and then you go home.
Yeah.
It's not like somebody comes and beats the shit out of you. It's not arduous.
It's such a stupid argument as well. It's like, oh, three sandwiches and you've had a fourth. I guess those first three didn't work then. No. That's not how it works, is it? Like, come on. Like, so that, like, oh, keep having your shots. Well, fine. Like, that's okay. Not a problem, to be quite honest. Like, as I say, in the same way that be cold. Oh, that jumper obviously doesn't work. Well, no, try putting a coat on as well. Like, it's not that it doesn't work. It needs more for you to stop feeling the cold. Oh, bollocks this. I'm throwing away all my jumpers because without the use of an extra layer, they're basically useless. Like, that's their argument. It's beyond childish.
Yeah. Also, like, a lot of the childhood ones are three or four as well. So
yeah. Well, was it tetanus is like four or five, and if you get exposed, then you know, go get another one.
Yeah.
So I guess one of the things we should do before we wrap things up, and maybe we've got plenty more to go, but one of the things we should do before we wrap up is we should promote the fact that you pair of bastards have made us two have to watch that Hunter Biden film.
Okay, yeah.
The thing is, like, if all it's going to be is, like, him smoking some weed, snorting some cocaine and having sex with hookers, that makes him look badass to me.
This is what I keep saying. It's like, am I the only one that looks at these videos of Hunter Biden and goes, cool? Yeah. Like, what are they going to do next? Like, oh, look at him shaming Hunter Biden. Look at him ripping out a killer sick guitar solo on this top of this exploding 4x4. What a waste. Hey.
It's amazing how that happened. So there was a Labour campaign ad years ago. It was about David. It was before David Cameron became Prime Minister, and maybe this is why he became Prime Minister. And they did a thing called Dave the Chameleon, and they had him sort of as a cute little chameleon. And he told the green lot this, he told the blue lot that, blah blah blah. And the idea was that they try to get across that David Cameron is duplicitous. Okay, yeah. Fine. That's a reasonable thing to want to say about your political opponent. And in this case, it may even have been true. I don't have an opinion. But they made him a neat-looking chameleon, you know? It was cute. Yeah. It made this guy who maybe had problems with being cold and aloof and one of these eating oddballs relatable. Was that, you know, that wasn't smart. It's amazing how often that happens, that people portray somebody in what they think is a negative light, but actually isn't.
But that's kind of, again, you've tapped into what's made all these sort of COVID grifters so successful. They've seen something in their audience and they've projected that, and their audience has gone, brilliant, I can relate to that. I'm also angry about the lockdowns. I'm also angry about potential vaccine passports, blah 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 blah. So that's what they've done. And what gets on my nerves is that it's so very transparent. I don't think they believe any of this. They might do. They might believe some of it, some of them, but it's more of a ideology and an orthodoxy than it is an actual sort of a detailed researching of the facts.
I have a theory that some people get involved in this for the same reason as they joined the Freemasons. And I feel it's the correct podcast to talk about the Freemasons. You've got this in club and you've got this secret knowledge, right? Oh, I know about this stuff and the pleb here don't.
Yes.
I don't know. I'm probably not going to get an invite after this. And people can get to feel clever, feel exclusive, and so on. And I mean, they could get the same emotion maybe out of extreme couponing, you know. And I got this coat for 40 pence because I added up 15 vouchers, you know. And they'd save a lot of money as well. That'd be much more beneficial.
It's a puzzle. Like, they like doing puzzles, but the point is that they take it to wicked extremes where they go, they assume that life is repetitive. For example, with, say, false flag terror or whatever, they'll go, oh, we've seen this particular pattern before. That must be the same thing on this incident. And they'll overlay things that they know, in inverted commas, and assume that the same thing has been done again and again and again and again. And that's just, it's not how the world works, is it? Like, if you come to something with the assumption that basically it must be one of these things and then try and prove it, rather than basically just looking at what's going to happen, you're always going to find that answer. In the same way that basically they would criticize the mainstream for having like certain belief structures that they don't think are real, you could flip that entirely around onto the alternative media with a lot of subjects that basically they've just come to believe these truisms. So-and-so said it, never bothered to check it, but I appreciate their authority as a researcher or like somebody that's been in the field for like 20 years in the same way that a normie would go Times, Telegraph, whatever, that's obviously got some gravitas to it. It's the same thing. And the inability to like shine the same critiquing light that you are so willing to do on the mainstream media and refusing to do it on the alternative media, and this sort of siege mentality, doubling down and doubling down. It just gets you. It's like do the basic explanation of it. It's an echo chamber, and an echo chamber is not where you're going to find the truth.
You have to be critical of everything.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's it. And I struggle with this stuff a little bit because there's definitely, you know, there's more reason for me to believe something that Dr. Susan Oliver says than Right Said Fred.
Yeah.
Right. Because at least there's an expectation that Dr. Susan Oliver will know what she's talking about. There's no reason for me to expect either of those pair to understand really anything. But you're quite right. If I blindly listen to everything that Dr. Oliver says or Dr. Botley or even Tom Whipple or whoever, you know, even though they're sort of they have a certain authority or a certain experience which is relevant, they might still be incorrect, but the chances of them being correct is definitely higher than the chances of Right Said Fred.
Yeah, like if I were listening to Susan Oliver or someone like that, like I wouldn't have to fact check every single thing that she says, but if I was to repeat something that she said, I would make sure that what she was saying there was completely correct because I wouldn't want to repeat a lie.
Yeah, that's the right mentality.
It's always healthy to be cynical, isn't it? Like of everything. Like, and you know, again, there's always degrees of truth to all of these things. You can find numerous examples where you shouldn't trust institutions like, I don't know, the mainstream media or the government or certain large corporations. But that doesn't mean that basically you switch it to basically or everything that this is the opposite, basically. Mm-hmm. Because that's not cynicism. Again, that's just a mantra.
Yeah, you're right. So, I mean, I don't trust everything that Apple do. But, you know, I'm chatting on an Apple Mac at the minute. I don't trust, you know, every big brand or whatever. I'm sitting with Bose headphones because I know they're good. And I know that the Mac's good. And I know that this stuff is good at performing a certain result for me. So I haven't went and, you know, I don't know what the equivalent would be, like Jerry rigging a laptop out of like a Raspberry Pi and some stuff, which, you know, would be kind of a cool project. But I, you know, I just want something that would work. And I know this is going to work. There's obviously problems with all these organizations, but yeah, it's difficult.
Yeah.
It's difficult to get a balance. I don't want to go immediately to an appeal to authority because I know that's a fallacious, it's a logical fallacy.
Yeah.
But like I say, there's definitely reasons why it's whenever Melville says something, there's no reason for him to know more than a bit of chewing gum that I've scraped off my shoe.
Yeah.
More and more people are waking up. Once you've seen it, you can't unsee it. More and more people are waking up. Once you've seen it, you can't unsee it.
So, obviously, we have some people who have not heard of Lands of Tour. Lands of Tour is me, Brent, and Ivor. And our next guest is going to be Jordan Wilden, who's going to be talking to us about open source intelligence, open source journalism, and trying to glean facts from things that people leave lying around in public forums. Jordan is a journalist who broke the HeartLeaks, and I'm sure we'll talk on that for a little bit, but the main focus is going to be about OSINT and doing your own research. So I'm very excited about Jordan.
Yeah, that'd be a good one.
Coming up next, actually, is Jeffrey Epstein. Did he or didn't he? That will be released on the 1st of November. And then 1st of December release is another collab, Lads on Tour. Some dare call it conspiracy. And we're going to get to the bottom of what is on Hunter Biden's laptop. And we're going to watch a movie. we're going to sit there and we're going to all have to watch Lawrence Fox.
Oh, good God. My Soul Hunter. Oh, dear, oh, dear. Like, the fact that Lawrence Fox exists, he's such a bad actor that he nearly ruins the Day of the Jackal for me just because his uncle's in it. That's literally how bad like,
you're going to have to watch, what, is it 90 minutes long or something?
Yeah, so afraid so. Never mind.
Well, you can double speed it if you want to.
I'm going to half speed it. Some people like the misery.
Yeah, so that's all coming up. And I guess that's it for the episode.
Yeah. Right, guys, so thanks very much for having us on, guys. And we'll see you soon.
Yo, awesome. See y'all later.